So I'm not all the way sure, like, when the holiday season ends. I think it kind of depends on, like, the status of your life, like, what season you're in. Of course, if you're a student, like, and you're still on spring break, then the holiday season is until you have to go back. But anyway, it's, like, really weird when, like, New Year's and Christmas and all those days are in the middle of the week, because technically, like, some of the first days of the year are work days or school days or whatever you might find yourself doing, and so it can be very tiring. So I'm, like, still in holiday season mode, but I feel like January the 6th is, like, the first day, like, back to life, like, back to reality, because it's sort of like your first full week of work, and now it's sort of like your eyes are set on, like, that 3-day weekend with the celebration of the Martin Luther King holiday. So I'm going to go ahead and say it's still holiday season, and that's why I can confidently say that this is, in fact, the holiday episode. And holidays, I guess, for within the context of this particular podcast, is sort of a time of recalibration and sort of kind of recentering. I know that, like, most of our jobs, like, we're closing out on projects, and, like, there's, like, the end of the calendar year for finances, and it's time to kind of, you know, like, look at our money situation because we have a lot of money to spend. And then the new year comes, pow, taxes, all kinds of things going on. But I think it's important, like, for people to take, like, a mental break from all things holidays, all things spending, all things work, and just think about, like, at the beginning of the year, like, what do I want to accomplish? Who do I want to be? What kind of person am I? And although I think that some people try to downplay, like, the new year, like, it's not going to be new year, you, new you. And, like, I've heard a lot of, like, kind of downplaying the, I'm getting rid of, like, old friends in the old year. But I do think that new years, like, represent, like, a newness and a clean stop and a clean start on things. And I think that people should take advantage of that, because if not, like, what are the clean stops? What are the clean starts, right? Like, and so we are in a new year. It is 2020 officially. And we, any day that we have on earth is an opportunity to improve our lives and to make a commitment to bettering ourselves. And so, therefore, my belief is that New Year's resolutions are appropriate. I also think that, like, aside from, like, these very specific goals that we might set for ourselves, we need to think, like, big picture, right? Like, what I want to accomplish, what I want to do, but also, who am I? Like, what's my potential? What's my capacity? Like, what's holding me back? What is going to push me forward? So on and so forth. My personal perspective is that, and this is just, I'm just going to talk about myself. I am going into, about 2 or 3 months into my 39th year of life. And at this point in my life, regularly I'm thinking about, like, decisions that I've made, things that I can do, things that I can do better, because I'm cognizant of the fact that we really only get one life, right? And average on folks are dying at 60 and 70 and 80 years old. And when you're almost 40 years old, that means that you have lived, you know, more than half of the average lifespan, right? And so I'm not necessarily having, like, a midlife crisis, because I don't know, I think I'm too young for that at 39. But I'm just really reflective on where I am in life. And, like, not, I think the key thing is not taking anything for granted at this point. And if there's something that I want to do, like I want to be in the position to do it. Like I want to acquire things, I want to grow things, I want to see things flourish in my life. But also, more importantly, I want to make an impact that is directly related to my purpose as a child of God, as a big brother, as a mentor, as a steward of the things that I have, as a preacher, as the minister of the gospel, all of those things. I want to be the best possible person that I can be. Therefore, I have decided that the word of the year of 2020 is focus. Now, I gotta say that there are going to, we're just gonna have to endure the fact that there's going to be a lot of like references to vision and sight in the year of 2020, because when we think of 2020, we think of Barbara Walters and we think of eyeglasses and eyesight, and that's just the reality of it. If you can take some good time to reflect on like some of the relationships between seeing well and living well, oh my gosh, there is just so much revelation, right? Like, I mean, it's a great way of like reflecting on life, like what you see and how it impacts like who you are, where you're going, etc. This idea of vision for life and vision for ministry and vision connected to purpose is really important, because you can, when you're driving down the car, when you're driving down the street, you can look out the window and there are several directions that you can look in. If your vehicle is moving, it's ideal that you are looking ahead, that your vision is focused on where you are going, as opposed to just whatever it is that you think, whatever draws your attention and whatever you see. A person who drives a car that is unable to focus on what they see in front of them is a very dangerous person, because that person who is has the potential to be sidetracked could really create some dangerous situations for other drivers that are on the road. So ideally what they say is that every driver on the road is supposed to be participating in defensive driving. Defensive driving is when I drive with my safety in mind and I drive with your safety in mind, and I make no assumptions about the kind of driver that you are, the kind of care and concern that you have for me, and your skill level when it comes to driving. I drive with myself in mind and I drive with you in mind. Vision is really important to safety. It's important to seeing the future. Clearly, it has a lot of impact on our lives. We've got to be able to see clearly to know what is ahead of us so that we might plan accordingly and so that we might act accordingly, right? And so that brings to the surface the importance of focus. I had I'm saying it's the awesome privilege now, but it was very nerve-wracking. But I had the opportunity to be one of the speakers at my church for our Watch Night celebration. For those of you that don't know, Watch Night is, it has a lot of sort of meaning, but I'll tell you what it means in 2020. In 2020, Watch Night is a service that a lot of charismatic churches participate in, where you gather late in the evening on December 31st to bring in the new year together, praising and worshiping the Lord. The difficulty with speaking at these events is that people like sit in anticipation for something that's going to help them to sort of navigate the previous year, but also navigate the new year. You've got to be charismatic and direct and inspiring, or folks are just going to be looking at you, which is a whole other podcast, believe me. This year, I don't know what it was, but the Lord had led me to talk about the word vision. And I talked about an instance in the Bible where the disciples were on a ship, and the Bible says that the wind blew and the rain turned, and they were essentially amidst a very fierce storm. The disciples essentially freaked out and were like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? Not remembering that the unique situation that they were in was that Jesus was also on the boat. At this time in biblical history, Jesus had already established himself as a miracle worker, as a healer, as somebody who could do anything with the exception of failing. The disciples, interestingly enough, became overwhelmed with what they see. So what I did was I thought about that very deeply, and I learned that our anatomy allows for us to be really overwhelmed by what we see. And you can think about this within the terms of like a staring baby who stares at you. A baby stares at you for the most part because they have something in their brain called the amygdala, what we all have. Something in our brain called the amygdala. And what the amygdala does is it helps us to categorize safety. It helps us to think through emotions. It does all of these things. When we are trying to figure out whether we are safe, what our circumstance around us is and what it means, we tend to freeze, and it takes another part of our brain called the cortex to kind of shake the amygdala free and to start thinking logically about the situation that we're in. So essentially the disciples, they were overwhelmed by what they seen to the point where they could not even remember or consider the fact that they had the almighty, powerful, all-knowing, all-creating Jesus there on the ship with him. And when they were able to hijack their amygdala and tap into their cortical thinking, they woke Jesus up, and Jesus began to speak to the waters and the waves, and boom, they were, the sea was calm, and they said, what manner of man is this that even the winds and the rain obey him? And so the premise of my lesson was that when we focus on our surroundings, then we become unable to think logically. And a part of our success, certainly in the context of Watch Night service, was to get believers to remember that they can go as far or even farther than they think they can go when they, rather than focusing on what they see, focus on who is with them. And so in this case, the storm was raging and it was big and it was scary, but it was no match for the person that they were with in the person of Jesus Christ. And so I feel like as a Christian, one of the things that I'm charged with doing, no matter what the situation is in my life, no matter what may arise in my life, I am empowered to remember that greater is he that is in me than he that is in the world. And that if God be for me, then he will be more than the world against me. I have all of these reminders in the Bible about who God is and what he is capable of. And when I am overwhelmed with the issues of life, interpersonal issues, issues at work, issues with friends and family, issues with finances, I need to remember that what I see or what appears to be obvious is not necessarily what I need to be focusing on. And so it's with this focus of doing what the scripture says, looking to the hills from which cometh my help, with the focus of setting my affections on things above, and with the focus of seeking the kingdom of God rather than personal riches, self-aggrandizement, all of these things, I can reach my full potential and walk in the purpose for which the Lord has called me to walk in. So my word of the year is focus. It is not to focus on necessarily the things that I want to accomplish, not to focus on the roadblocks that stand in the way of my accomplishments, but rather to focus on Christ and to believe in my heart that if He will bring me to it, He will bring me through it. To believe in my heart that if I am able to see Him as an all-knowing, all-powerful God, but I could trust Him even with the minute situations of my life, as well as the things that are like huge. And so my focus is on Jesus. So I'm casting my cares, my concerns, my wishes, my dreams, my hopes. I'm putting them at the feet of Jesus and saying, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to serve you, and then I'm going to trust you with the cares of life, right? I'm going to serve you. And while I'm serving you, I'm going to believe that if it is for me, then you will take care of me. You will provide for me. You will show yourself strong in my life. You will ensure that I have what I need. You will do everything that your word says that you would do. So back in the year of 2015, the Periodical Fast Company wrote an article entitled Eight Ways to Improve Your Focus. Here is what they said about improving our ability to pay attention. Here we go. All right. Number one way to improve your focus, according to Fast Company, is to prepare your brain. According to Fast Company, what they say is before you do a task, you need to calm your brain. And they recommend that you take some time to sit in a position that makes you feel more comfortable, take deep breaths, and do some work to calm yourself. So I think that's fascinating, right? Like before you start to ask your brain to do work, like reset. So they're saying prepare your brain, reset. Number two, understand where your focus needs to be. Focus also involves an understanding of what is worthy of your distraction, says Ron Webb, who is an executive for the American Productivity and Quality Center. Webb also said, according to the article, that taking time to identify what deserves your focus for the year, for the month, for the week, for the moment, whatever that might be, allows you to have a dedicated focus. So that might mean, like, before you get started, like, this is me adding to the article. That might mean before you get started, taking the time to make a list to say, here are the things that I want to accomplish in a short amount of time. So if you're taking some intentional time off, if you are doing some health and wellness work, if you are cleaning your house, like what would success look like? And being able to jot that down and being realistic, right? Because you don't want to be like so far out that you're causing yourself to be unsuccessful and then that leads to stress because you're disappointed with yourself because you weren't able to accomplish like whatever false goal or ghost goal you've created for yourself. So thirdly, they say unplug for 30 minutes. Sometimes you have to pull away from things, recalibrate. Unplugging essentially means that anything that would normally take you a distraction electronically, you pull yourself away from that. It's like the phone. Sometimes it's just separating yourself from any technology, wherever that might be, and just going to a place where you can recenter. Take a walk in the park, go to the garden, make sure you're working. Sometimes if you're in the middle of like doing schoolwork and you take a walk and just kind of separate yourself from things, you can kind of recalibrate. Number four, drink some coffee. Coffee, according to a French psychologist named Astrid Nellick, they were able to identify a connection between caffeine and cognition. Now, most of us don't need this scientific representation because we already know the power of coffee, right? We get our coffee in the morning and we get going. But it also might mean that we make adjustments to when we drink coffee, centered around like lag times, when we know we have meetings or when we know we need to focus, right? And so being intentional about when you have the coffee. All right, tips 5 through 8 from the article. They are number 5, check this thermostat. Check this thermostat. If you want to improve your focus, check this thermostat. According to the article, if it's too hot or if it's too cold in your work environment, that impacts your focus. If you've ever worked with anybody who gets cold very easily, you know this to be the truth. I'm cold. It's too hot. Like, for me, like, in order for me to be most productive, the environment has to be the best. It has to be conducive to what I need to do. So just like, you know, at church, they'd be like, we got to set the atmosphere. Like, gotta set the atmosphere for productivity. And so a part of that, according to this article, is that you have to check the thermostat. Number 6 will come as no surprise to most people, but in order to ensure that your focus is A1, turn off some music. Some folks say that too much background noise, according to the article, can be very distracting. But Wake Forest School of Medicine and the University of North Carolina published some scientific reports, for which are linked in this article, that say that having music playing help you focus on your own thoughts. The catch is, you have to like the song. So what that means, according to these scientific reports from Wake Forest University School of Medicine, the University of North Carolina, is that you might want to make yourself a playlist, right? You can't listen to the radio, because if the radio plays a song that you don't like, then you might lose focus. So, cool. You're going to set the atmosphere, like we just talked about, making sure that it's not too hot or not too cold. Got a good playlist going. Number 7 says take short breaks, right? Build in some break times amidst productivity, right? It's going well, I'll take a short break. Now, this is a little bit tricky because it depends on, like, how you deal with breaks. For me, I don't know. If I step away, that might be it. So it just depends on, like, how your mind works with regard to breaks. Particular one notes a study from the University of Illinois, which says that psychologists Alejandro Leras found that participants who were given short breaks during a 50-minute task performed better than those who worked straight through. So essentially, the outcome of your work better when you take breaks. 8, no surprise either, although we do need to make some adjustments in this area, is doodle, right? Sometimes when we see people doodling, we assume that they're not paying attention. According to this article, which references the University of Plymouth in England, doodling helps our cognitive function and helps us to perform and recollect what we hear. That's crazy. This is what researcher Jackie Andrade said. Doodling simply helps to stabilize arousal at an optimal level, keeping people awake or reducing the high levels of autonomic arousal, often associated with boredom. So, doodling helps. Doodling fights boredom, and then it helps us to remember what we hear. That's interesting. Usually, I would prefer to write things, and so when I start writing things, then I become focused on what I'm writing. So you have to decide whether that one works for you. It must work because I see people doodling and I'm like, oh, okay. And now I'm going to, when I see them doodling, I'm going to believe that, well, maybe they are retaining more information than the person that's staring intently at me. Okay. Number five. Top five pet peeves of British folks around the holidays. Number five. Awkward conversations. First, let me just say, I read this and I was like, am I British? Okay. Awkward conversations. I don't know if that would fall off, where that would fall off my list, but it definitely would be in my top five. Awkward conversations, number five. Number four. Having to take your shoes off at someone else's house. I can see that. That is pretty annoying. To me, can we do something like, if you know you're the type of person that, like, you're hosting people and you're coming, you have folks come over, like, can you put in the Evite or the text message or the email? You need to prepare people for the fact that they're going to be removing their shoes at your house. That's how I feel. The Brits must feel the same way because they said that their number four pet peeve was having to take their shoes off at somebody else's house. This was one of the topics on Thanksgiving in my household because one of my aunts got some white carpet put in their house, and everybody was like, oh my goodness, white carpet. Folks like what they like, right? But my grandma was telling me that she had like a bin outside of her front door with like some socks that people could put on, which I think is really cool because what you're saying is, I might be inconveniencing you by asking you to take off your shoes. Since I am, I have an alternative for you. Now, maybe we just need to keep our feet clean, number one. But you might have sweaty toes. You might have gone a long day. And you would not have anticipated having to take your shoe off. And then you get to somebody's house and you're stuck. So, I'm going to have to agree with the Brits. I'm not trying to get somewhere and learn that I have to take my shoes off. I don't mind. But I'd like to know in advance so that I can be prepared. Also, too, like if you have like, wood paneling or cold floors or stuff like that, like you need to tell people to bring a pair of socks or something. I think around the holidays, though, you can get really inexpensive like holiday socks, and that's a great way to say, welcome to my home. Like it's a holiday party, you grab some socks and put them on. Okay. Number three, me and the Brits do not agree. It is, and this is not in any way related to, you're going to just have to figure this out. The Brits say that the most annoying thing around the holidays, number three, is screaming children. It might just be my life, but children are always screaming, and so that wouldn't be on my list. I wouldn't even think of that. So the Brits say number three, I just like kids. And so I do like feel bad for people that have to do like Christmas shopping, but don't necessarily have like people to watch their kids because that can get really annoying when like you're trying to like get something for a child. And it is a pretty hectic season. I can see like why like having an uncontrolled child like in a mall or a restaurant or something where it would be problematic. So the Brits say number three is screaming children. Number two is missing favorite TV. Missing favorite TV. Like your show doesn't come on or your show is replaced by a holiday special or I personally do not have a TV. Well, I have a TV, that I recently acquired. However, it's not really, it's not a big deal to me on the TV thing. I do, however, like stay in a lot of hotels around the holidays. And so I don't even know what's on TV. So I love how they're doing like reruns of things. Because, you know, you can watch like a whole season of something in like one day if you're just kind of like lay in the hotel bed and just enjoy life. So I can understand what people are saying around the missing TV thing. It would not make my list. But like I said, I don't have cable, so I wouldn't even be missing anything. I'd just be really excited to see whatever's on. Finally, number one. The number one thing that British folks says annoys them the most in the holiday season is a cold house. Like you go to somebody else's house and it's cold. Your house is cold. British folks do not want to deal with a cold house. I get that though. I kind of feel like the idea of something being nippy, and this might be because I'm like a real like solidified Californian. And so I just, I'm kind of, you know, sometimes I want a little cold breeze or something so that I know that it's winter, you know. So the sun is out right now and I'm like, gosh, I want to experience some winter, but I'm going to go to Seattle. It's going to be some winter anyway. But anyway, so a little chill in the house and like the opportunity, like I'm the type of person that like turns on the air conditioner and then throws a blanket over me because I just want to be cold so that I can be warm. Is that weird? Anyway, the Brits say they don't want to deal with no cold house, period. It's the most annoying thing around the holidays. So that's the list. Awkward conversations, having to take your shoes off, screaming children, missing your favorite TV, and last but not least, a cold house. Okay, so I hope you have enjoyed this episode focusing on focus. I wanted to, before we close out this episode, just tell you how I'm defining focus for the year. I know I've been rambling and talking about focus this whole time, but here is what I'm thinking about. So what I did was I gave every letter, what's that called when you give like every letter a meaning? Like F is for, O is for, don't know, but that's what I did because I thought that that might help me better articulate what I think focus should mean and look like. So here we go. F. F stands for free yourself of things you're attached to that don't align with your purpose. If you're going to focus, you have to free yourself from things you're attached to that don't align with your purpose. You can become inundated with activities and things in your life that do not directly have anything to do with what you're here on earth to do. In fact, folks would love for you to become inundated with remedial tasks and things unrelated to your mission in life. You have to be the person that owns the responsibility of ensuring that you are intentional about the things that you do. So that's F. O, open your mind and heart to new experiences. Sometimes our inability to focus has a lot to do with our like being stuck on routines and doing the same thing over and over again. Doing new things can be very encouraging to us because they can inspire us to think differently and to do things that we haven't thought about doing. For instance, like, you know, when I go on vacation, to other places, especially when I'm around my friends and I decide to, you know, listen to what they're talking about or invest in, you know, things that are important to other people that wouldn't necessarily be things that I care about, I might hear something that gives me an idea about how to do something that I care about, right? You know, I'd hear my friends talking about stocks and bonds, and right away, that's not something that's appealing to me. But as I'm listening to them talk about stock and bonds, it might empower me to think about a message that I want to preach or an event that I want to have a stocks and bonds theme. Right. And so sometimes exposing ourselves to new activities and new events helps us to focus more intensely on what we are called to do. So that's O. C is create space for growth. So similar to O, like we have to be intentional about the space that we create for growth. That means that if we intend to learn more, we intend to create space for growth, we have to read books that we did not intend to read. We have to go places that are different from where we normally go. We have to throw away things that it's really hard to think about replacing a couch if you are still fully using and engaging the old couch, right? And so sometimes you gotta throw out the old couch first to inspire you to get the new couch. So creating space for growth means that you are preparing yourself for what you could potentially gain by opening yourself up, right? And so creating that space. You use what you have. Sometimes our challenges is that we are so imbalanced that we think that we don't have what it takes to do what we need to do. And there are some aspects of life and purpose where God has already equipped us with what we need. We just have to try to use it, right? Which means that we need to be careful about what we complain about, because we might be complaining about things in our life that God has actually intended for us to use to get to the next stage of life. And so using what you have, like, allows you to step away from wishing that you had something else, or using the excuse that if I had this, I would be doing this. No, you potentially have what you need to move forward. You've got to take inventory. You've got to decide that that glass is half full and not empty, etc. So use what you have. The S, finally, stands for seek God. If you want to grow, if you want to go to the next level, if you want to mature, seeking God will assure that that happens for you. Because when you decide that you're going to align your will with His, He will not fail you. Because you're saying, Lord, my ultimate purpose on earth is to fulfill what you've called me to fulfill. And since I'm deciding to walk in your will, I have your attention. I know you're not going to let me fail. So seeking God is fundamental to creating focus in your life, because He will not cause you to slip into areas that do not that are not germane to what you are called to do here on earth. So again, free yourself from things you are attached to that don't align with your purpose. Open your mind and your heart to new experiences. Create space for growth. Use what you have and seek God. Thank you for joining Season with Salt. It's been a pleasure to be your host. My name is Dominique Beaumonte. This podcast is available on a number of platforms. We hope you will check them out. We are on Spotify, Apple, and a number of other platforms. Check us out. Share with your friends. And again, focus.